This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
The following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Boone. Today on the program, I sit down with a guy that's been with me kind of from the beginning of my professional career. We've been buddies for a long time, been through a lot together. He's been the color man with the Seattle Mariners since 2007. He's seen a lot of Mariners games, and I'm really looking forward to getting together with this gentleman today. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show, Mike Blowers. Blow, thanks for coming on the program. It's Blower Power, for those of you that are wondering.
Robert, it's good to be on the show, and you sound like a real professional.
I'm a pro. I got a script. But I'm a pro. all right. Before we're going to have some fun stuff for the Brett Boone Podcast today, but I want to talk to Mike about this. You've been with this ball club a lot of years. And before you were on air and the TV, the color commentator for the Mariners, you did a lot of behind the scenes. You were doing the post-game show. And I was listening to you on my way home from games, and we'd have good fun with that. I'm like, how about that caller last night, Booney? That's what I do. And so you've been watching this team for a lot of years. You've been there for some great years. You've been a lot of lean times. You saw him through spring training. We're into the first month of the season. Give me Mike Blower's early assessment of this 2024 ball club.
Well, obviously, everybody was leaning on the pitching coming out of spring training. They got off to a little bit of a slow start, but they have been on fire lately. And that includes the bullpen. It's a rotation and the bullpen. So that part of it seems to have settled down. Their defense has gotten better, I would say. But their offense has been inconsistent. They've had a number of guys that have struggled out of the gates. Polanco still hasn't hit his stride. Garver is also in the same boat. But they've had some other guys that are starting to heat up a little bit. With Julio, he's kind of the key to all of it. Although he's getting his hits now, he still has just the one home run. And I'm hoping that when he gets to the point to where he hits a couple of them, they'll come in bunches, kind of like they did last year. He got off to a slow start in April last year, too. So we'll see where all of that goes. It certainly didn't help to have JP go down. We'll see how long that oblique bothers him. But overall, when you look at their record and where they're at, I think they've weathered the storm and they're doing okay. And obviously Houston's really struggling, so that helps too.
You know, you mentioned Julio, and I think you're right. He's that guy. I mean, he's the generational talent. He got off to a slow start a year ago. And when I watch him, you've got to do it kind of with this kid's still a young player. You know, we tend to just, you know, the big contract and the expectations that we put on Julio, you tend to think this is a grown 30-year-old man. He's still a kid learning his way. And you can tell he puts a lot on his shoulders, his own shoulders, as far as he wants to get out. He wants to get out of the gate. He wants to be that legitimate MVP candidate. And to do that, you got to kind of have a good April. Well, that hasn't happened the last 2 years, but he pulls it together. And I agree with you. I think this team is going to go as Julio goes. You mentioned Garver, Polanco getting off to the slow start. I saw the offseason acquisitions and the changeup when it came to this lineup. Obviously, they were trying to get away from strikeouts, more contact. Well, they're still striking out a lot. I looked at this a year ago when they did that. Not quite a year ago, but this offseason. There was something about Eugenio Suarez that I really liked. Never met him, never been around him. But he had a way about him, Mike. He showed up. He posted. You could count on Suarez every day. I think he was an underrated defender at third base.
Agreed.
You knew he was going to put 25 balls in the seats, drove in 90-plus runs. Also, Teoscar Hernandez in right field. Struck out a ton, hit close to 30 homers, drove in 90. My first question when they didn't retain those two was, how are you going to replace 190 RBIs? That was my first question. You go out, you get Polanco a few years back. He hit 33 homers. Potential there. He's been banged up the last couple of years in Minnesota. You get a guy in Garver that comes over from the world champion Texas Rangers. He's off to a slow start. Had a good year a year ago. And you bring back a Mitch Haniger, who really is a fan favorite in Seattle. He seems to be comfortable in Seattle. Big knock on him has been his ability to stay healthy. Your assessment of that offseason, and what do you think they miss from the guys they let go? What do you see going forward with the new guys?
Well, I think the first thing that I would say is you're right on your assessment with Gino. I thought he was an underrated defender also, and I think that Perry Hill did a really good job with him when they first got him coming over, because he struggled a little bit in Cincinnati with his defense. But they got all that turned around, and look, in the clubhouse, he was one of the favorite guys there. They were just in town. He was just in town. And Scott talked about him being with the Diamondbacks and just how popular he was and that he was one of his favorite players to ever manage, just to the point that you're making. And with Gino, he posted every day. Teoscar was available, you know, but in those two guys, that's 50 home runs you're talking about that you're taking out of your lineup, and how are you going to replace that? Or, you know, with the way that they went about it, it wasn't necessarily replacing the home runs and the RBIs. It was just cutting the strikeouts down, because they felt like if they could manufacture more runs with the pitching that they have, they would be in a better place. And that just hasn't happened yet. They're striking out. I think they're leading the league in strikeouts right now. So they need to get that cleaned up. And until they do, I don't think the offense is going to be as consistent. The one thing that we saw against the Diamondbacks and at the end of the road trip in Texas is they actually hit some balls in the seat. And you can see what a difference that makes when you're able to do that. So that's why, for me, they really need to get Julio going, because Julio's going to hit 30-plus. If he gets it going like he did last year, the August he had was unbelievable. But they got to get him going and hitting the ball out of the ballpark, because if they can do that, then the pitching will take care of the rest.
You know, I look at this lineup. You mentioned Crawford. I think a year ago he came a long way in that leadoff hole. And I can't explain it to people when they ask me. It's when you watch a game, there's just something that you watch a player and he's got that thing. It seemed like Crawford a year ago really became that guy that would lead off the game and the rest of the offense would follow. I think he was a key role a year ago when they won 88 games. He's going to be out for a while. That's big. But that pitching staff, and I've got to give kudos to Jerry DePoto, especially in the bullpen. We all know what they have, that rotation, five deep, and I'll get into that in a minute. But that bullpen has been really solid in the last 3 or 4 years, and it seems like it changes every year. Yeah, there's been a couple guys that have been mainstays, but you've had several guys, a Seawald comes to mind, that moves on. They've been mixing and matching, but they still have that power bullpen, not to be disappointed this year.
They do. They got some disappointing news on Matt Brash, who's supposed to be a big part of the back end of that pen. He's not going to be around for a while. He's going to Dallas to get his arm looked at again. So we'll see what comes out of that, but it doesn't sound real good. Santos hasn't been available to him, but they went out And about mid-spring, they ended up getting Stanek in there. They signed Stanek because they had a need, obviously, with those two guys getting hurt. The back end of the bullpen is good, but they do stuff that is with the bullpen that is remarkable to me, because I say it every year going into and coming out of spring training. You never would know what a bullpen is going to look like in a particular year, even though maybe you have some of the same faces. It's just kind of, you know, it's one of those things where you flip a coin on what's going to happen, but these guys continue to do it. And they have, like, now they have Spire, a guy that couldn't stick with Kansas City, and all of a sudden he's one of their leverage guys, the lefty out of the pen. You got Miller, you got Bolton, all these guys come in and they just do a good job. And I think what they do more better than anybody is they identify what you do well, and then if you're going to buy into it, they can convince you to throw a certain pitch more often or maybe reshape it a little bit. These guys now all throw that sweeper up there, and it's every organization that does it, but they can teach all that stuff. And the bullpen has been a real key, and it has been this year too. When you're talking about trying to constantly, which is amazing to me, trying to hang on to one run, and most of the starters say they're out after six, and you got to hang on to it for three innings. It's pretty impressive to watch what these guys do.
You mentioned Stanek. He came over from the Astros, and what they've done the last 6-7 years, they've had a stronghold on this division. Talk to the to what kind of an influence a guy like that is coming over. That he was in an organization where, well, no, it's not a matter of whether we make the playoffs this year. We're going to the playoffs every year. It's whether we win the World Series. And that type of mentality, they got him late, and he's been a big part of that pen so far. But do you think, is that overrated, or do you think that mentality coming from a winning atmosphere rubs off on other guys?
I think there's something to it, but I also think that if you are that guy, then you need to go out and get it done also. And that's what Stanek has done. That's why, to me, it's important for Garver, who won a World Series last year, to get things going, because I think that he could have the same type of influence, because that's what they talked with him in spring training. That's what they talked about. But with Stanek, I was amazed, Brett, when he came in and he saved a game this year. It's fairly early in April. I didn't realize that when he was with Houston, he only had like four saves. He was pitching the high leverage seventh, eighth inning is what he was doing, and then turning it over to the closer. But I just assumed after seeing him for a number of years over with Houston that he'd have his opportunities to save games, but he hadn't done that. But he's really good at what he does, and they can put him in those leverage situations and hand things off to Munoz. So I think there's something to it. But I think that the way I've always looked at it, even when I was playing, you know, you can talk about certain guys, but you still have to go out and get it done, and he certainly is doing that.
Watching this team recently, 9-3 in their last 12 games. And I don't remember the last time they didn't have a quality start from that starting rotation. And you're getting Wu back here shortly. But I look at this rotation, and I think this year, and I've said this before, I think for the first time in a long time, the American League West is a vulnerable division. It's there for the taking. And I look up and down. I'm going to get your assessment of the other teams in that division. But I look at this starting five. There's nobody else out there like that. And as position players, you remember back in the day when we had that guy, we had a Randy Johnson type. Now, I don't want to compare these guys to Randy Johnson. I think that's a little premature. But you know what I'm talking about, that high leverage stopper, that if we've lost three in a row, oh, Randy's on the hill today. We're going to win today. And as position players, we're coming to the ballpark feeling pretty good we're going to win. At any time with Castillo, Gilbert, Kirby, Miller, Hancock's been in there now. Wu's coming back. At any time with this rotation, you can come in and go, oh, he's pitching today. We're going to win. They're that good. They're five deep. They all potentially are number one and number two starters in a five-man rotation. I think they're just that much better than anybody else in the division. Your take?
I would agree with that. And we haven't even seen the best of Castillo yet. He's just now starting to get there. Real slow start for him this year. He just always had that, seemed to have that one inning that would get away from him. But now he's been dealing the last couple of times out at the top of this rotation. You know, they're amazing to me, the way they go about their business and the way that they do things. But I agree. Look, the pitching for the last couple of years has been the strength of this club. It comes down to how much offense can they generate, because the pitching is going to be there. And, you know, to me, Scott talks about winning series all the time. You and I both know how difficult it is to sweep anybody, but win series, just consistently win series. And when you have those five guys healthy and going about their business, it gives you a really good chance to do that. You can put little runs together because of how good they are. It's just coming down to how much offense you have, you know, and we're going to wait and see how that goes. They had a number of guys out of the gates. I think they only had Haniger, a couple of guys that were really swinging it, and everybody else was struggling. And now they probably have four or five guys that are swinging it better. But we'll see what happens. And, you know, too, at T-Mobile, it's a bigger ballpark. So we'll see. I think that's one of the reasons why they wanted to get away from the strikeouts, see if they can manufacture a little bit more. And we'll see if that works. So far, it really hasn't. But moving forward, we'll see what happens with the offense. But pitching-wise, I think you can string together series wins consistently over the course of the summer, which is going to be a big difference. Because I agree with you. I think the American League West is wide open, especially with the struggles Houston has had. Texas had some injuries to their pitching staff. They're going to get some guys back. It's like some real dudes coming back right around the All-Star break, and we'll see how healthy they are when they come back. But I think that if you can separate yourself and get yourself a little bit of a lead right now, that would benefit you immensely.
Yeah, and I sit there and I listen to guys. Oh, we don't want to talk about it. It's not just all pitching in Seattle. Well, there are some positives to this offense. You mentioned Julio. Haniger can do damage when healthy. Crawford, huge, going down. He's a good player at the top of that rotation, plays gold glove defense. Polanco, it's a wait and see. France has been inconsistent over the years. Raleigh, I really like. I love him as a receiver. His catch throws as good as anybody. I think the pitchers like throwing to Cal Raleigh. So that's always a positive. We think back to our times and a Dan Wilson. The pitchers like throwing to him. They're underrated in value, that catcher that does a good job handling a staff. But when push comes to shove, Blow, I'll get your thoughts on this. It's not a comparison when you're going to go to Houston and that lineup, when you're going to go to the Texas Rangers in that lineup. Mariners just don't have that type of roster at this stage. I think at best, when they're clicking on all, they're going to be middle of the pack offense, and it's really going to and I'll tell you what, if this pitching staff stays healthy and pitches the way they can, if you can just hold serve as an offense and kind of be in the middle for the American League, I think that's more than enough to get it done in this division.
Yeah, I think that, I would agree. I think that offensively, now that they have some guys that are going a little bit better, and it's still inconsistent with some of them, I think that they can do some. By the way, talking about Cal, there's not a catcher out there that's hit more home runs the last 2 years than Cal has.
Yeah.
I mean, that dude's got some real pop, and when he puts the ball in play, he puts it in play with authority, a switch hitter. You're right about his ability to catch. The pitchers love it. He takes charge. I mean, he's really grown into a top-tier catcher that you would want to have, both up on both sides of the ball. But offensively, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you start looking at it at 4.5 runs a game, right? That's kind of what everybody puts their finger on, 4.5 runs a game. I don't think they have to do that. You know, 4 runs is going to be plenty. I was looking at some numbers from the starters, and when you start talking about scoring 3 runs or more, and their records are unbelievable. I mean, they just don't give it up. And when you got to back into the bullpen, and we'll see how that goes. I mean, they're going to really lean on those guys. They need to get some people to, I think, get healthy again. If they can, that would certainly help. But I agree. I think offensively, if they can just stay in the middle of the pack, that's going to be more than enough.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Moving on to the division, you know, and Oakland's been better than I thought they were going to be at 12-17. L.A., I think the Angels just can't pitch enough at 10-18 out of the blocks as we tape this Boom podcast. But the two guys, and I think it's going to come down. It's going to be Seattle. It's going to be Texas. It's going to be Houston. Let's not kid ourselves. And it's a 3-team race for this division. Let's go with Texas first. Okay. Won a World Series a year ago. They're still the king of the mountain. You got to knock them off, but you look at that offense, still great. The pitching, you lose a Montgomery. He goes to the Arizona Diamondbacks, a key factor in that postseason run a year ago. DeGrom, the guys you were mentioning, DeGrom, Scherzer, they're due to come back around midseason. Scherzer are his best days behind him. See how viable he's going to be. And then DeGrom, you never know when he's healthy, obviously, Mike, to the naked eye. DeGrom's as nasty as a guy there is out there. It's just a matter of him staying healthy. But I look at that rotation. It's Evaldi. He's evolved into a number one type guy. And but he's what they have. A Dunning, a Gray, a Haney, Lorenzen they just signed. I think they're quality pitchers. But when you're talking about winning a division and going deep into the postseason, you got to have DeGrom and that type of presence, I think, to get farther. Your thoughts on the Texas Rangers?
Mariners just played them at their ballpark, and they won the series, the Mariners did. That's why I was saying earlier, Brett, that I felt like for the Mariners right now, they're stringing together series, which is what they need to do, and they need to start separating themselves, which they're starting to do that too, because Texas has the opportunity. We'll see. But when they get those guys back, even if, you know, you talk about Scherzer, even if he's not at his top-tier Scherzer, he's still going to be pretty good. And DeGrom is special, there's no question. But I thought that the Mariners did a really nice job of working their way through that Texas lineup. You know, and for me, I'll take the pitching any day of the week. And the Mariners pitching, I thought, really showed themselves as being better than what Texas has right now. So we'll see where it goes from there. But I still think that this division is up for grabs. And with the way and the run that the Mariners pitching is on, and guys are starting to swing it better. You mentioned Ty France. Ty's starting to hit the ball. In fact, I was looking at the other day. I don't know how much you like to get into the minutiae of the numbers, but hard hit rate, he was like 30th in the big leagues is where he's at right now. And that's a good sign to me with him moving forward. I don't know how much power he's going to hit for, but he's starting to hit the ball hard and hitting it with authority, which is a good thing. But offensively, they have some guys. They have some dudes that can get it done. And my hope is that and this is something that Scott talks about. When Julio's hitting the ball in the air, good things happen, and he's starting to do that. That could be a real difference maker to me, because it seems that he takes a lot of pressure off of everybody once he gets it going. He's that talented of a guy. And if he can do that, if he can get it going like he did last year, they're going to be a force, man. But I like the way that they went out and competed against Texas this first time around. Last year, they had a brutal time in Arlington. They could not do anything with the Rangers, who went on to win the World Series, obviously. But this year, I thought it was important for them to go in there and play well, compete, and win some games. And they did that. So we'll see where it goes the rest of the way. They're going to play them some more, obviously. But I thought that was a pretty good first step.
Yeah, you're right. They had it's been their nemesis. They've had that Houston Astro nemesis for years. But a year ago, you're right, they went to Arlington. It didn't come out good for them. Talk about the Houston Astros. And everybody's talking about their terrible start, and it is. And as we shoot this show today, they're 9-19. And they're last in the division. Something the Houston Astros of modern day, they're not used to being in the basement of a division. But I tell people, and this is still my thought, this could be the end of this kind of dynasty and this epic run that they've had. But I look at that roster, and I look at that offense. You still got an Altuve. You've got a young, talented shortstop in Peña, who seems to be off to a good start after what a lot are calling a sophomore slump. You got Alvarez, one of the biggest offensive guys in all of baseball, an MVP candidate on a regular basis. You got a Tucker, who's an MVP candidate as well. This offseason, they didn't add to the starting rotation, but they went out and they got the best reliever available, and that was Hader. I'm interested to hear your take on this. We were talking about Stanek earlier, and he was doing a lot of high leverage in Houston a year ago, and he'd hand the ball to Presley. Presley's been the go-to guy for the Houston Astros at the end of that bullpen. All of a sudden, the offseason, they go out, and I don't think management does this to say, oh, no, we need a new closer. They just saw a Hader available, the best reliever on the market, and said, no, we're going to make our power bullpen more powerful. Now, we all have egos. Presley's been that guy for years going, wait a minute, you're bringing in another guy? I'm not doing the job? No, that's not the reason. We just want to be as good as we can be. But a lot of times in the early goings, and it's been tough sledding for Presley and Hader out of the gate, is there something to that where they're just not kind of comfortable? Presley's the closer, but now Hader's the closer. I think you'll get to a point where it's just be a professional and go out and get their job done. But there can be a little bit of a little bit of an aura that's broken up when a move like this is made.
Yeah, I think there's something to that. And I think that, you know, maybe when you're used to doing something and you're in a certain spot, if that starts to move around on you a little bit, it can be disconcerting. I'll say this, and I'm not in the middle of what Houston is doing in their bullpen, but we both have seen that type of thing that you're talking about happen in the past. But that's one of the things that you start this year and you automatically think, okay, Munoz is going to close. He's earned it. He deserves it. He's nasty. That's not been the case, though. When there's a high leverage situation in the seventh or eighth inning, and you'll see it again, they have Atlanta coming in. You'll see it. Munoz will be up in the bullpen, and he'll come in the eighth. And there isn't anything about the closer role or the setup man or any of that. It is these guys are all like, just tell me when you want me to get up and get the ball. And that's something that Pete Woodworth, the pitching coach, and the guys in the pitching side of things have done a great job of, is don't worry about your role. Just be ready to go when we call down there. And, you know, there's some guys that have been doing it for a long time. You mentioned Presley and Hader both. So maybe there is some sort of dynamic to that because that's what they've been doing forever. But they have guys that really haven't had that closer role, so I don't think that they look at it the same way, even though they're nasty and, you know, they can get people out.
And you go to that Houston starting rotation, Verlander starts in the IL. I don't know how much longer Verlander can do it, but so far he's done it. He's back. Blanco's been the real bright spot in that starting rotation to start the year in a dismal start. But the key to that is having Verlander. Urquidy's out. Valdez was out. Javier was out. Now Javier's back. So there's a lot of mix and match, a lot of what ifs when it comes to the Houston Astros. But on paper, the talent level, that roster, if all healthy, if all playing well, it's they're going to come out of this 9-19 start. So that's why I say, yeah, maybe this is the end of that unbelievable run that they've been on. But I'm not sleeping on them yet. It's just coming up to the end of April. It's a little too early for me to throw in the towel on the Houston Astros.
I would agree with that. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How much of a difference do you think it's going to make not having Dusty there?
We haven't even factored that in. You know, all of a sudden Dusty leaves. A beloved guy, a Lou Piniella type guy,
yep.
You know, one of those classic, a Bruce Bochy. And when somebody gets up and leaves, nothing to the new guy coming in. It's nothing against Espada. It's just the replacing of a legend. You know, those guys got comfortable with Dusty. He's like your grandpa, your father, that figure. He just has a way about him. And sometimes when something that big of an icon leaves, there could be a little bit of an empty spot there. I don't know, though, with this type of team, this veteran type of team, I think they have the ability to move on and separate that. If it was a younger team, somebody that's come up with him and he's been there from the beginning, I think it would be a bigger deal. But I think these guys are pros, and they find a way to move on, you know.
I agree. I just think maybe it's taking them a little bit of time because – things are just different. And, you know, going back to what you were talking about, the bullpen and Hader and Presley out there, things are just a little bit different. And you don't see the same guy on the top rail every day. It's just different because these guys have all played for Dusty. You know, that's what they did. They're used to it. It's just like, man, you playing for Lou. You know, it's one of those things where you're used to it. And you have a certain respect every day that you walk into that clubhouse. And it takes a little bit of time to earn that.
Yep. You got Atlanta at home. For three or four, I don't know how many.
Three.
And then you go to Houston and to Minnesota. It'll be interesting just because history-wise, Houston, we talked about Texas being a nemesis. Houston's a nemesis as well. But I think with this starting rotation, I don't know. My eyes tell me things could be changing because these guys are one year more of experience. And when I talk about that, I talk about a Gilbert, a Kirby, a Woo, a Hancock, that type, a Miller. They got one more year under their belt, and it's just seems that these guys know they're good. You know, you come up and you see the stuff, and you think, oh, this guy's got a chance to be good. But then there's a look in your eye after a certain point where, no, this guy's got good stuff. But scary thing is, he knows he's good now, and it's not an arrogant thing. It's just a matter of a confidence thing. All right, I'm here. I proved myself. Now I'm ready to take to the next level. And I look in the eyes of some of these starters for the Seattle Mariners, and I see that look like, no, I know I'm good. And like I said, not from an arrogant breath, just from a sheer confidence. And that's what I see when I look at this ball club. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch to see if they take it to another level. Because let's be honest, there's one playoff in the last 22 years. And a city that we both grew up in as far professionally.
Right.
It's such an awesome city. And when you're winning there, the way that city embraces the team, I'd love it to get back to not coming into spring training and thinking, oh, if we can get to the playoffs, it's like bullshit. Get to the playoffs. Have that atmosphere of, no, it's not a matter of getting there. We're going to get there. It's how far we're going to go. We're going to win a World Series. And I think that's a culture that's got to be kind of put into place. And to a certain point, with your accomplishments earned.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. And, you know, when they started with this team and they put it together with the pitching, they did a really nice job in their draft. When you talk about Kirby and you talk about Miller and you talk about Gilbert and the guys that they have, Wu, that's where it all starts for them, along with putting that tremendous bullpen together. But I think that you just have to keep it going. And you know what? Quite frankly, there's a lot of expectations on this team. And a lot of it is because of the pitching staff. And I think that if offensively, they have guys that have been there and done it. It's just a matter of getting it done as a collective group and being on a consistent basis with that. And I think that one of the things that Scott talked about, I think it was two nights ago, they had another good win. But he just said, you know, that offensively, he still feels like they can be a pretty good offensive club, but they're just not there yet. They're still trying to hit their stride. And I think that that's true for a lot of different reasons. But to your point, the expectations from everybody isn't just to get to the postseason, but to get deep into the postseason and see what happens with the World Series sometime. And, you know, we'll see what goes with that. But to me, I think that, you know, everything revolves around health, obviously, but their pitching is certainly something that can get them there, because they just, I think they're like 16 games in a row where it's been two runs or less out of the rotation.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And the bullpen is just, you know, they're shoving it. And that's something that you can hang your hat on. And then all of a sudden, as the summer comes along and you get further into this thing, we'll see where it goes. But I'm curious to see what happens when they go into Houston. That's going to be a good series too. They got some quality teams that they're going to be up against, even though Houston has been struggling lately. It's still a different thing when you go in there, because they're going to get it turned around. I believe that too.
In Minnesota, you know, they're off to a slow start, but they got some pitching that can stop you in your tracks when they get it up and run it.
Right.
All right, we're gonna change tracks a little bit here. Okay, Blow. Who would you have ever thought this? Now, go in your time machine. Me and you sitting in Calgary, Canada.
Okay, way back.
Maybe having a cocktail.
Yeah.
Did you ever think one day, you know what, Blow, one day I'm going to be doing a podcast. You're going to be doing color for the Seattle Mariners, and I'm going to be interviewing you one day. What would you have said to that?
I would have laughed out of the bar. I'm telling you that right now. There's no chance that either one of these things would have happened. Not a chance in the world. It wasn't anything that I ever even thought about. And I thought about you, and I thought, well, you know, I could see Brett maybe managing one day or doing something if he wants to, but a podcast?
Who would have thought? Yeah, my agent says, hey, during that pandemic, he's like, Booney, I think you need to get your chops on this side of the mic, and I want you to do a podcast. Said, are you crazy? I'm not doing a stupid podcast. And he said, yeah, now I want to start having you interview some people around the game and friends of yours, you know, famous friends. And I said, what am I going to do? It all started. I'm sitting there and Andre Reed, I'm at the gym and he's working out with me. And I said, Reed, you're going to be my guinea pig on my new Brett Boone podcast. And he looked at me and he goes, are you serious? I said, yeah. He goes, all right, I'll be the guinea pig. And that's how it all started about 4 years ago. And, you know, Odyssey came along and it's been a great, great relationship. And here we are sitting here.
And you're doing great.
How for you, I got questions for you. Cause we've been friends for a long time.
Yeah.
And I never thought, you know, when we were playing, we never talked about post career, what we were going to do. All of a sudden you end up on the radio in Seattle. Then you end up on TV in Seattle. Now you've been doing it. You've been bringing us Seattle Mariner games from the booth since 2007. How'd you get there?
I ended up getting a phone call from the local radio station that was doing pre and post game stuff. And they asked me if I was interested. It was a year after I was playing. And I said, no, I'm really not interested in doing that. I'm trying to figure out, you know, some things and where I'm going to go. And then they called me back a couple of different times. And then Nicole looked at me and she goes, you need to find something to do. So I said, I called them back and I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll do it, but I don't want to. Does it involve travel? And they said, no, you're not going to travel. I said, okay. I said, how many games do you want me to do? And they said 35, I believe it was. And so then I showed up to the ballpark and you were playing. It was 2001 and you guys were winning every night and smoking people. And I'm taking phone calls on the post game show. And I'm like, this is great. You guys are happy. The callers are happy. They're winning every day. This is easy. And so then the next year they asked me to do 60. So I said, sure, I'll do 60. Still a good team. I did that. And then they had a switch over on radio and the flagship station called me up and they asked me if I would do, I think it was 120 games. And I was like, well, do I travel? They said, no, we'll set something up at your house. Kind of like what you're doing right now with the podcast. And you just watch the games on TV and then come on and do pre and post that way. And then one day, Randy Adamack, you know Randy, he just came up to me or called me in the winter and said, hey, would you be interested in interviewing for TV? And I said, let me think about it. So I talked to Nicole again, and she said, you never know when this opportunity is going to come. Why don't you just go ahead and do it? So I went through the process, and they gave me the job. I'm walking out of T-Mobile Ballpark, and I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to be on TV now. You know, but of course, when I did the TV thing, I had to travel, which was the one thing that I didn't know if I wanted to do or not. And I've been, you know, been on there for 19 years now. This is my 19th season doing it. Never expected it to ever happen. Never thought about it. It just kind of, you know, like you said, things just kind of started going, you know, at a slow pace. But I eventually got there because I think I was on radio for 5 years doing that kind of stuff. But that's what how it all happened.
Your day to day. And yeah. It's a part of your job. How much interaction now? I remember back when I was playing. Yeah, you'd come down to me and you would BS in my chair, and we'd talk about the game and the series or whatever you're talking about, golf and my great golf swing. But how much interaction do you have with today's players day to day?
I would say not a ton, basically, because, you know, I work with Aaron and Dave and Rick and Gary, and those guys are, you know, doing their thing every day in the clubhouse and all that stuff. My big thing that I like to do is I'll go down into the dugout, talk with Scott. If I need to talk to one of the other coaches about things, I'll do that. Sit on the rail. If there's somebody that I need to get, I'll go get them. But I personally, I like to give them as much space as possible. So just to go down there and just BS is not what I do. It's not my style. I don't care about what their hobbies are, where they want a vacation, any of that kind of stuff. But if there's something going on, then I'll talk to them about it. But I like to give them their space and I hang out at, you know, on the batting cage or whatever, that kind of thing. But there's certain things that for me, I try to give the guys as much space as possible. They don't need all six of us down there all the time.
Biggest challenges for you in the booth, on TV, doing games on a daily basis? Because I could imagine doing a team every single day. After a while, you're getting in your own head going, I said that yesterday. I said that 2 days ago. Could I quit saying? Because we're so hard on ourselves. I know doing this show, it's like I like to get out of patterns. Oh, I said that last show, you know, for Mike Blowers. How is it? Because you've got – and everybody's always said that. And as players, we notice that. Mike Blowers always has had a really good way about him, whereas he can get in there, give you a little critique without pissing you off as a player. Because, you know, as players, that's what we do. In between the bats, we're up, we're watching. They see and hear everything that you say, especially being on TV every day.
Yeah, no, I know that. I think it was harder for me to be critical, which is part of the job, when I first started, because all you guys were my friends. You know, I mean, that's the thing I was thinking about more than anything. How do I do this and do my job, but not irritate my friends enough? And so that was harder. Once I was into it for probably 4 years or so, then and I kind of figured out what my job is and what I need to do and how I go about it, because I didn't have any training for it. It was just one day I was in the booth and, you know, 1, 2, 3, go. It's that kind of thing. But I got to the point to where I felt like I could be critical in an area. And the one thing that I always think about is if I say this about Brett makes an error. And I said, that's a play that Brett needs to make. I can say that because I know that if you come to me and you go, hey, what were you talking about me making that error and this, that, and the other play? And I'm like, so you're telling me that you can't make that play. You're going to go, well, no, I can make the play. So then I think that's fair criticism, right?
Right.
You kicked it. You kicked it. You made a base running mistake. You made it. It's right here on video. I mean, what are you trying to tell me? I don't go past that too much. But, you know, you got to talk about guys having a slow start. You got to talk about guys that are struggling during the season in June. You got to talk about a game like yesterday where in the third inning they had the bases loaded with nobody out and they didn't get it done. You got to talk about those things because that's important. And it's something that I even brought up at the end of the game because that proved to be the difference. They, you know, they end up losing by a run. So you have to go down that road. But I think the main thing for me is to always remember it's a hard game, man. It's a hard game. And you got to be fair about it. And as long as you don't take it to a personal level, you should be in pretty good shape. And at the end of the day, if somebody has a problem, you got to be willing to talk to them about it. That's it. That's all there is to it. I mean, it's pretty straightforward for me. Sometimes it gets pretty emotional. Like you look at last year when they didn't make it to the postseason and they were right there up to the last day. You get caught up in that because the fans are going nuts. The players, you get the intensity of it all. But you got to still be able to do your job. And for me, that kind of stuff is fun. That's the fun part. But you just got to be fair, Brett, and just realize every now and then take a step back and realize it's a hard game.
It is. And you're right. I mean, I think the guys you've got to be critical. You've got to be critical for the guys out there in the audience watching the game, because if you're not, you'll lose the respect of the audience. And you lose the respect of the audience, you're done.
Right.
So, but there's a way to go about it without being a jerk. There's a professional way. It's called professional criticism. You got to have it as a player. I expected it. You know, I got to a certain point in my career. I was making a lot of money. There were certain things that come with that. When you sign certain contracts, there's an obligation that comes with that. And I always felt like I was accountable. You know, if I was struggling and we were losing, I had to be criticized. And if I wasn't, it was like, geez, this is too easy. You can, you know, they praise me when I do great, but they comb it over when I'm not doing good. And I think there's a time and a place for it, but I never had a problem with guys being critical. It's just doing it in a professional way. As long as you're professional, that's part of the gig. And I think, and this is a credit to you, I think you've always done a really nice job at being critical without being offensive to the masses. And, man, I think that's why you've been there for so long, to be honest.
Well, I appreciate that because it's something that I've worked really hard at for a long time.
Yeah. It's not easy. And it's not easy doing it by the way, you got to do it again and again and again and tomorrow and there's no off day and do it again and the team stinks. And report on that and find a way not to just completely blow them up. It's not an easy job.
I was lucky, Brett. I was lucky. I didn't realize it at the time. I didn't know it at the time, but it turned out to be something that I was fortunate to go through. And that is with me breaking in with the New York Yankees. The team wasn't good. I was a young player. I had no idea because everything, you know, you go through high school, college, minor leagues, everything's going great. And then you get to the big leagues and you're getting it handed to you. And the team is losing in that environment. And I realized one day as I was sitting in my locker getting ready to answer a bunch of questions again that, you know what, this is just part of the deal and you either be a pro about it or not. And I took responsibility, to your point, for what my play was or not and dealt with it. And then I just knew that it was part of the deal. And so that by the time that I got traded to Seattle and ended up staying there on a regular basis and was an everyday player and all that, that's part of the deal, man. I always sat in my locker when the game was over, and here I am. Do you want something? Here, just give it to me, and I'll take whatever it is and move forward. But after a while, I think, and you put a little bit of time in at the major league level, you also gain the respect, because when you and I were playing, it was a lot of local media. You gain the respect of those guys, and they treat you the right way. And if somebody didn't, I would say something about it, but it was very rare that ever happened.
Speaking of when we were breaking in, I got a few. I'm going to ask you a few questions. I think the audience will get a kick out of it. Our early days. And I tell people this all the time. I said, Blow, when I first, you know, remember, let's go back in the day. Okay, we're in AAA together a little bit. I'll set the stage for the listeners out there. Mike's a little bit older than me. He's been to the big leagues back and forth. He's kind of on the shuttle. He doesn't know he's coming or going, but, you know, he's got some big league time, but he's got a lot of minor league credibility, and he's one of those guys on the fence. So I'm coming up. I think I'm this hot shot prospect, and Mike's dealing with me at the AAA level. He's probably pissed because he's down in AAA again, and he's got to deal with guys like me coming up. We become friends. So a year later, that's Lou's first year in Seattle. It's 1993. I'm the heir apparent to Harold Reynolds. And remember, that year was the year that there was no main field at Peoria. So we were on the road every day. Guess who was on the road every day? Me and you.
Yes.
And I remember the last game, because that year, remember, it was all about, I'm the new second baseman. No matter what, this wasn't an option. Well, I remember getting to the last game. Game of spring training, and we're playing the Oakland A's, and you're there sitting with me on the bench waiting to go in for somebody, and I'm not in the lineup. I started every game, and I'm sitting there, and I'm walking around that dugout like confused, like, wow, maybe Skip's just giving me a reward for starting every game. And I remember, I don't know if you remember this, you come up to me and go, Because you kind of were in that spot in your career where you had the veteran's ear a little bit, but you were still a scrub.
Right.
But you were a scrub that was allowed to talk to the veterans. I wasn't allowed to talk to the veterans. I was just the rookie. So you had the insight. And I remember you kind of said, and you kind of did me a favor. You kind of looked at me and go, Booney, hey. I said, Blow, what is going on? Why aren't you starting? And you're like, well, I don't want to be the one to tell you, but I think you're getting sent down. And I said, no way. Me? And you're like, that's what I'm hearing, man. I just want to give you a heads up so you're not shocked. Because everybody probably knew except for me. I mean, you got a lot of naivety when you're in that position, you know?
Right.
And the writing's on the wall. Brett, you're the rookie. You're coming in. You're replacing somebody at the time that was a pretty popular player in Harold Reynolds. Everybody's told you it's your job. You start every game in spring training. And then the last game, Richie Amaral starting. So anyway, I get back and I remember
And from what I remember, you had a really good spring too.
Yeah, it was decent. It was just me and Lou butting heads. And you know, everybody knows the second time around with Lou is a completely different animal. But I remember moments like that. I remember in 92 when I first got called up and me and you were in those makeshift lockers at the Kingdom. And I'm sitting there, I get a base hit, my first at bat and an RBI. I'm sitting there at first base going, shit, I'm going to get about 3,500 hits in the big leagues. This is easy. And about 6 weeks later, I'm sitting next to you in the, like I said, the makeshift lockers. And I turned to you and I said, Blow, tell you what, the big leagues is hard. And you looked at me and you're like, no shit. You might want to make an adjustment, kid. But those are the times that you go through. You know, I looked at the young Holiday kid, and it seems like a good kid, obviously a tremendous talent. He just got sent down for the Orioles, and they're like, oh, why would they send him down? I said, listen, this is a part of the gig. This is the growing up process. Very few people come to the big leagues. Very few Ken Griffey Juniors, very few Julios come to the big leagues and just off to the races. There's usually a growing process, even with some of the greatest players. You got to come up. You got to go down. You got to come up. You got to go down before you stick.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I obviously did that a number of times. I have to laugh too. I don't know what year it was. I think it was 93. I made the team as a utility player. That's how I made the club. And I don't know if you remember this, but I went to spring training. I was even catching.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So, but anyway, you were playing and I can remember runner on second, nobody out. Here comes Boone. He sits up there. He hits an absolute rocket right at the third baseman. And you're like, well, I did my job. I hit it hard. And Lou was like, you got to move the guy over. And then later in the game, and when I was going to the ballpark that day, I felt like I was going to be the one sent out because I knew they were making a move. And then later in the game, runner at third, one out, you end up striking out on swinging at two fastballs about neck high. And yeah. I'm sitting on the bench going, I ain't going anywhere.
This young kid, he's got plenty of time. I need this job.
Brett just saved me with this game, and sure as shit, they sent you out.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Those early days, they're so funny. And it's they just, are. You know, I look back at them and I get it. And every kid gets it. And that's why I look at young players now and I just, hey, you'll learn, man.
It's a part of the deal. It's a part of the process. And it makes us who we are. It makes us tougher in the long run. You know, it's a different game now. It's a different game. Guys come to the big leagues and you stay away from them. I remember that first camp of mine, my first big league camp was 92. It was like, you speak when spoken to, you sit in the front of the bus. You don't do it. Well, of course I was different. I had to test Buhner and Bozzio and those guys. I did what I wanted, but I got punished for it. But, you know, I don't know.
You know how many times I had to walk over and say, hey, Jake, can you just leave him alone for a bit? Boz, lay off.
Leave Brett alone. Leave Brett alone. And then those guys, though, were unbelievable. You know, away from the yard, they take care of me big time. They buy me clothes and dinners and give me free rent, and I didn't have to pay electric bills. But I'd get to the ballpark, and they just abuse me.
Yeah. Well, you know, your relationship was the same thing with Lou. Lou, mm-hmm. you were testing everybody, but Lou was testing you.
Yeah.
He was knocking you down, but I'll tell you what, when you go full circle and you came back to the Mariners, you were his favorite player.
Yeah, it was. It was all worth it. And maybe as a young player, I needed to go through everything that I went through. And a lot of us need to go through everything we go through to get to the other side. It's life. And it's not just as a professional ball player. It's in whatever arena you're in. It's just humble pie is not always a bad thing, you know, and we see it with raising our kids. It's like you hate to see your kids go through stuff and have humble pie, but in the end it's usually the best thing. It's not the easiest thing to watch, but it's in the long run it's always the best thing, and you learn life lessons from it. So
I think that's true, but I also think too, Brett, it's how you handle it. You know, when you talk about the playing side of things, it's how you handle things. And eventually, you either make a career out of it, you play, you stick for a while, and hopefully you end up on some teams that win. I feel very fortunate that when I was playing, I got to play on three playoff teams, you know, and I think there was a reason for that. And it's all the crap you go through to get to that point. And then, you know, you end up having to put up some numbers and do some things. Obviously, that's part of the deal. But, you know, I think it makes you a winning player if you handle it the right way.
Well, Mike Blowers, it's a lot of fun, man. I appreciate you coming on and doing this. Best
of
luck.
I'll say, man. I want to see what it was all about. I heard a lot about it. And I was looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's. I'll probably see you in the next 3 or 4 weeks. I'll be up in Seattle. But cool. Appreciate you. It's always great catching up, and I appreciate you coming on the Boone Podcast. For those of you out there watching the Brett Boone Podcast now on YouTube, appreciate you tuning in. For those listening, wherever you get your podcast, wherever you download them, appreciate you tuning in. Until next time, keep it right here.